Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Coco Express, part of the Blog Talk Radio Network. Your host on the Coco Express is Aurelia Lyles. She's all about keeping it real. Great guests, interesting topics, so get on board. Listen, learn, live.
Welcome, welcome. It is Saturday, January 12, 2013, and it's time for Real Estate Straight Talk.
Welcome to Real Estate Straight Talk with industry professional Sharon Homer, breaking it down and giving you the inside track on the real estate front so that you too can achieve the new American dream.
Hello and good afternoon, everyone. This is Sharon Homer, your realty expert, and we have today Teresa Martin on the line back with us to finish up our discussion that we had 2 months ago regarding building generational wealth. Welcome to the show again, Teresa.
Well, thank you so much, Sharon, for having me. I'm so excited.
It's always a pleasure. I'm sure our audience is very excited that you're back as well, because we had an extreme amount of excitement from the last show. There was a wealth of information that was actually provided, and we a lot of the viewers, well, listeners, had a lot of questions, follow-up questions that we were unable to get in the last segment. So I was hoping that we can open up with getting some of the listeners' questions answered. Are you open to that?
Yes, I am. That'll be perfect.
Okay, great. I know in the last segment you had mentioned, gave a website, nationalrea.com, and there was a caller who had asked what the buy-in is for a REIT, real estate investment trust. Like, what is there a typical buy-in for REITs?
No, there is no standard buy-in for a REIT. And just for you, just reiteration, a REIT is a real estate investment trust. And REITs are specific strategies, and they're either publicly held REITs or privately held REITs. Some REITs can be purchased as part of a DRIP, like a dividend reinvestment plan, for as little as the cost of one share, while others may require a $5,000 buy-in. Like Walmart, Walmart has a DRIP. It doesn't have a REIT, but it has a DRIP, but there is a very small $250 buy-in to buy a Walmart stock. And then there's other REITs, like senior citizen homes and things of that sort, that you can also get in with the cost of one share, and that's a minimum of like $50 that you can get in to buy certain types of REITs. And then there are others, like I mentioned, at $5,000.
Okay. And I know there were several segments ago when we had Connie and some of the other real estate professionals on the line from some of our from Chicago and Ohio, and we had talked about there was some talk about, in order to get into real estate investing, there was a recommendation to tap into your 401k to be the initial starter to real estate investing. What are your views on borrowing from your 401k to invest?
Well, it depends on what type of 401k you have. I don't typically, from a traditional standpoint of a traditional 401k, I don't recommend borrowing from a 401k to invest in real estate. I do approve of and endorse and think people should get involved in self-directed IRAs and self-directed 401ks. And what that is a generic term used by the Wall Street brokerage firms and custodians. And in this case, it means that you can self-direct your own investments. But the choices are, you know, definitely better than what you would have in a traditional IRA, because in a self-directed IRA, you can invest in real estate, gold, you know, different types of stock market and things of that sort. And in this type of distressed property market that we have now, potential home buyers have been forced to become renters, and the rental rates are increasing, you know, by more than 12% nationwide. So right now, if you have a self-directed IRA or 401k plan, you can use that plan to invest in these type of properties, even with your 401k, self-directed, of course, growing your retirement portfolio into the future by actually getting you 12% interest on or return on that money. So I think self-directed is the way to go.
Okay. So if you were to, for that caller who asked that question, you were to look into 401k investing, then you are recommending, if doing so, be very careful, do your research, and self-directed IRA gives you more of that flexibility.
Correct, and they should talk to their brokerage firms or custodians to find out more about that.
Gotcha. All right, thanks, Teresa. And then we had another caller who asked, with the owner financing options that were provided on the last show, what happens if the owner passes away? And that question is a little vague, only because I'm not sure which owner financing option they're referring to. But what actually happens if the owner passes away during the, I guess, contractual agreement?
That's an excellent question, actually. And that caller was definitely on point when asking this question. But you're right in that it depends on which type of owner financing strategy is used. And as mentioned, you know, when you do land contracts or seller financing in that realm, the deed is usually held in escrow. So in very simple terms, you know, an escrow is basically any deposit of funds, a deed, or any other instrument that is being held by a party for the delivery to another party upon the completion of that particular condition. The condition that we're talking about would be you're meeting the contractual obligation of making all the payments. So once you made that contractual obligation to make all the payments in, say, a 3-year term, if you will, because that deed is being held in escrow, once you make the final payment, that deed would then be turned over to you, and you would then take title to that property. So even if the owner passed away, you would still get the deed because it had been escrowed. So that's how you protect yourself in seller financing.
Okay. Okay. All right. That makes a whole lot of sense. And so that's with the owner holding the deed as well as the land contract, correct?
Correct.
Okay. All right. And one of the other questions that were asked, and I'm going to try to figure out how I can word this one, is when an investor can a mortgage, I guess this has to do with owner financing as well, Teresa, but in owner financing, can the mortgage or can the notes be sold to another investor? I guess, you know, in the regular mortgage world, your bank can transfer over to another bank. It can be sold. You may start with one bank and have another bank. Can that also happen in the realm of owner financing?
Absolutely. Same thing holds true. Same thing holds true. And if you think of it in terms of the owner that's doing seller financing, which is providing financing to the buyer, is now in that position of a lender or a bank. So you would think about it in the same way. So just like you mentioned that, you know, can the bank transfer the notes and sell notes all the time? Same thing holds true, because if you sold your property using owner or seller financing, chances are that you may want the freedom from collecting payments for the next 10 or 20 years, and you might prefer to get a lump sum cash payment today, tomorrow, next week, what have you. So that mortgage note buyer will perform a detailed review of the transaction, and that's known as due diligence. We all heard that term. And this may include, you know, looking at the settlement statement, the promissory note, the mortgage or deed in trust, you know, depending on what state you're in, and, you know, looking at that buyer's credit. You know, these are the things that, you know, a seller who is doing seller financing, they have to keep all these documents in its proper place so that you can reach them. So if you do decide that you're going to sell your note, these are some of the things the note buyer is going to want to see. So the answer to the question, yes, you absolutely can sell your note to a note buyer.
Is that common for someone to do that? It is?
Absolutely. Yes, it is. Some people just get into real estate in order to then turn around and be the bank. The ideal of being a real estate investor, you're looking for one, residual income, okay, to replace your, you know, your employment or your job. And then the ultimate goal is to be the bank. So to provide some type of seller financing and then be in turn, like the bank, sell your note out if you need cash now, if you will. So yes, that's absolutely common.
Okay, and there are investors who are also in the market to particularly purchase notes, what they call, I believe I've heard the term note buyers.
Yep.
So that's a market in and of itself also.
It's a market in and of itself. If you go online right now and say, how do you buy distressed notes or mortgage notes? And you'll have a whole slew of people selling mortgage notes, courses on how to buy mortgage notes. It's a lucrative field, and, you know, it's, you don't have to deal with tenants or anything like that. You're just the note buyer. So just like, you know, Bank of America would sell their note, I can go in and be in a pool, and I can say, okay, Bank of America, I have this amount of money. I want to buy your notes in Tennessee. And if it comes up and they have a broker that would do that, they will actually provide me the list and I can bid on those notes.
Wow. Wow. It's a, I tell you, real estate is a really diverse world when it comes to investing. It's just, it seems like we're touching on something new each and every day, each and every time, which is a great thing. And I hope listeners that all of our listeners are taking some notes, because you guys are actually posing some really good questions here. And there was another question, which is, I believe, is more of a refresher. I believe there may have been some misunderstanding about the owner who holds a note and holds the mortgage, who is acting as the bank, which we spoke on the last time. And then there was the land contract, which is purchase for deed, is how you best describe it. And there's an escrow and a time frame that that is, whether it's 3 years. You don't really go to settlement right away, I believe, is what it is. Is that right with the land contract?
That's correct. That's correct.
Okay.
And yes. It can be a little tricky, especially in such a short period of time that, you know, we're trying to touch on everything. But let me just try to break it down as basic as I possibly can.
Okay.
Because I think this is the time that people need to understand seller financing because of this tight credit market.
I agree.
So seller financing, you know, can be a very useful tool in this tight credit market, and it allows the sellers to move their homes faster, you know, and get a sizable return on their investment. So what the basic mechanic of seller financing is that in seller financing, the seller takes on the role of the lender, as I mentioned before, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of giving cash to the buyer, the seller extends enough credit to the buyer for that purchase price of that home, minus their down payment. Now, keep in mind that for seller financing, because you don't have to go through the credit aspects and things of that sort, your down payment is usually at least 20%. Okay, the buyer and seller then sign a promissory note, which contains all the, you know, terms and conditions of that loan. You then record that mortgage or that deed of trust, depending on what state you live in, and then you record it with the public records authority, you know, the county clerk or whatever, where the property is listed. The buyer pays the seller, or the mortgage servicing company. If the seller decides to use a servicing company, you would send your payment to a mortgage servicing company like you would do a regular bank.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would pay the mortgage payment, the interest, and possibly the taxes if they escrow that, and we prefer that you escrow your taxes so you don't have to worry about that. The deed is transferred then to the buyer. So this is the traditional seller financing. So you actually get that deed in a seller financing transaction, and then the buyer will be responsible for all the maintenance, and the buyer earns the tax credit and the benefits of homeownership, et cetera, et cetera. These
Correct.
Terms of these loans are very, very short-term, because from the seller's standpoint, the short time is practical, because they don't want to count on having the same life expectancy of a mortgage lending institution. So they don't want to be patient around 30 years waiting for you to pay off your loan. So it's usually
makes
about
sense.
Five years, and then you're going to have to refinance out of that loan. Okay, so that's seller financing in the gist of it. So regular, straight seller financing, just think about the seller as the bank.
Mm-hmm.
Then you now have the land contract, the agreement for deed or contract for deed. Here, the homeowner agrees to sell everything but the deed to the buyer, which is, you know, held as collateral. it doesn't pass to the buyer until the buyer actually pays the full price of that contract term. So you don't get legal title, you get equitable title, okay?
And it's a
temporarily shared ownership. So the buyer makes payments to the seller, and then after that final payment, the buyer gets the deed. And, of course, we just mentioned that that deed is going to be escrowed. So if the owner dies and before you pay off, make that final payment, you still get the deed. And the purchase price is agreed upon at the start of the deal. So the buyer pays up front, you know, 2 to 10% of the agreed purchase price, and then the monthly, you know, payment, et cetera, just like a regular seller financing deed. And then everything is everything. So just think about it as in seller financing, you get legal title with the deed.
Mm-hmm.
And then with a land contract, you get equitable title, and you don't get the deed until you make that final payment. So that's
okay.
The difference between those two strategies.
Okay, great. I think that was an awesome explanation, Teresa. Thank you so much for that. And I hope that listener is listening again today or will tune in to listen to receive the answer to that question. And one of our last questions, actually, which is a good transition into our next topic for today, is there was a question, well, a mention of wholesaling real estate in our last conversation together. And this one caller wanted some additional information on what exactly that was. And I think that's a great transition into our next topic so we can kind of touch on what wholesaling is. Last conversation, I think it was mentioned very, very briefly, but if you can kind of just give us an explanation of what that is and we can kind of go from there.
Oh, sure. Okay. Wholesaling, basically, and we're talking about wholesaling in the terms of real estate, but it could be in the terms of fashion or whatever. When you buy wholesale,
yeah, right.
You know, so it's just wholesaling, okay? So if you want
mm-hmm.
to break into real estate investment business without having, you know, to invest large sums of money, wholesaling real estate could be a very good, lucrative opportunity for you. It's the safest and fastest and easiest way to get your feet wet in this profitable industry called real estate. Okay, and this has helped many people achieve wealth and freedom. So in its simple terms, wholesaling real estate is when you purchase a property well below market value and then quickly resell it to an investor buyer at a reasonably markup price. Here is a, you know, here you just think about you buy in wholesale, you're still going to be selling on wholesale, but you're actually going to be providing a little markup for yourself, and that's where you actually get your profit. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So that's the gist of it. Now, I do need to go in terms on, you know, it's some key steps that you take
mm-hmm.
to get involved in this, and I will like to go over that because a lot of people who want to investigate this industry, you know, and the strategy called wholesaling, they really
mm-hmm.
need to know these criteria because it's very important to understand how it actually works. There's only four steps.
Okay, go. Sure.
Okay, so in this, you know, it's four basic steps that you need to deal with when you're dealing with wholesaling. Now, remember, the advantages or pros of real estate wholesaling is that you don't need very little amount of cash to get started. You have very little exposure, so very little risk. You have the ability to make quick cash fast. You know, you don't have to worry about tenant issues or concerns. You don't have any contractor issues, and it's a great entry into real estate, and you don't have to worry about your own personal credit. Now, the cons to wholesaling, it provides, you know, fewer tax benefits than any other investment types because it's just really a cash-based business. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's generally smaller amounts of cash made on each transaction because you're really just wholesaling. So you might just get, you know, $1,000 or, you know, up to $5,000 on a transaction. But, you know, if you're not using any of your money or any of your credit, that might be okay. And it's not a long-term wealth-building strategy. So with that in mind, the pros and the cons, think about the first thing you have to do for this to work is to find a motivated seller, you know, with
mm-hmm.
a property that fits your investor buyer. Criteria. So the magic word here is motivated because people say, oh, can I really do that? Yes, you can
mm-hmm.
really do that if you actually find a motivated seller. And you
mm-hmm.
need a motivated seller in order to obtain that best deal. And who is a motivated seller? A motivated seller sometimes is a person who needs to sell the property. and they're more concerned with the quick sale as opposed to receiving top dollar for their property. And oftentimes, you know, the motivated seller could be someone who's going through a divorce, you know, who needs to relocate, or the homeowners who are getting ready to face foreclosure if they don't sell, you know, their property. So you should take, you know, a good look at the property and make sure that you're able to purchase the property 40 to 60% or less of its after-repair value. We call that the ARV. So that's the first thing. You need a motivated seller for this to work. If you don't have a motivated seller, it's not going to work. The second thing is you have to make an offer and put that property under contract. So although every market is different, there's a popular formula that we investors use to actually get our determine our maximum allowable offer, which we call the MAO. So this is the allowable offer that's determined by discounting the after-repair value, you know, of a house up to 65%, and then we subtract the cost of those repairs that, you know, we need to make to the property. And then many sellers will refuse your offer straight out, okay? Now, 65% of after-repair value, are you kidding me? But that's why you have to deal with motivated sellers that need to sell their house, because you will be rejected a lot of the time. But for that one time that you're not, oh, my goodness, the deal and discount that you can get and the profit you can make, okay? So that's the number two. And then the number three is you have to locate a cash buyer. This doesn't work with somebody who you're selling to that needs to get a mortgage. It doesn't work that way. You need a cash buyer at the end. So the easiest way to find cash buyers for your wholesale deals is by simply driving nearby neighborhoods and locating any home that is currently being renovated, because often you'll find that the owners of these homes are real estate investors that, that may be looking to acquire more properties in that area. So you can also market your wholesale deals by placing ads on online, Craigslist, and putting out bandit signs and stuff like that if it's allowed in your community. So that's the third step, locating a cash buyer. And then lastly, closing the deal. That's the beauty of it. Because once you have a profitable deal under contract and you found an interested cash buyer, then you simply need to close the deal in order to receive your check. So I don't think anybody have a problem with that. And the beauty of wholesale real estate is that, you know, you don't need cash or credit, like I mentioned before, and you never have to worry about renovating a property or dealing with tenants, because you simply find a good deal and a serious cash buyer, and you will have a winning combination for getting quick cash. But wholesaling real estate may seem very intimidating, you know, even though I went through the four basic steps, but it doesn't take long before it becomes very enjoyable and, quite frankly, very addictive. And the amazing thing about wholesaling real estate is that you can do it anywhere, you know, be it in your own hometown or in another city, you know, and rest assured that, you know, you can wholesale anywhere in the country, not just, you know, in your own local state. And what matters is that whatever location you choose, you must focus on those two things that I mentioned, finding a motivated seller who is willing to sell their property at a deep discount and a serious investor buyer who can quickly purchase that property from you for cash. But any place that these two ingredients is found is a perfect place for wholesaling houses. And that's pretty much the basics of wholesaling 101.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It sounds like the gist is, like you said, having those two things to find a motivated seller and a cash buyer is to really build up your network, because you're going to spend a lot of time networking to find that motivated seller and to have a network. Hopefully you have a network of cash buyers for when it's sale. Now, with wholesaling, is it at all possible to, or is it even beneficial for the wholesaler to buy the property outright themselves and then turn around and to sell it to an investor?
Whenever, let me answer that two ways, okay? Now, think about it. Usually the people who wholesale are really coming in as an entry point to real estate investing.
That's
okay. So they're usually basically a liaison, okay? So they are now going out to find a motivated seller, getting that property under contract for a very deep discount. And then when that property is under contract, they would then assign their rights to that contract to an end buyer, an investor, who will then in turn purchase that property cash. Now, if they had the money to purchase the property outright, it wouldn't be wholesaling. It would probably just be a flip.
Now, is every does every state allow the that clause for the assign to be written in to their agreement of sale? Are there any states that you know of? I know that you're licensed in several states, but are you familiar at all with any states that do not allow that clause to be written into the agreement of sale that could potentially prevent the wholesaling aspect of investing?
First, no state can limit contractual contractual obligations. So, so you can put anything in your contract you want to put in your contract as long as it's legal. You know, you can't do prostitution and stuff like that.
I understand that point, but I know most states, you don't have to be an agent to wholesale, and I know that's what you were saying before. When you're at settlement, there's typically a board that goes with every state of realtors, and that contract is written by that board. So I wasn't for sure if you were aware of any real estate contracts that were written to prevent any assigns at closing.
I got you, and let me answer your question. Yes. All of the state contracts state that there is no assignment. However, that's when you come in with your rider and your addendum, and then you state that this contract is assignable. The addendum and the rider prevails. Okay. The only time that you cannot wholesale, and I can tell you this from every bank, is that REOs, bank-owned properties, cannot be wholesaled because they have a clause and they will not allow you to do a rider to limit that clause.
Yeah.
You cannot assign an REO property. So you cannot wholesale an REO property. You would have to close on that property and then resell it. And sometimes they put clauses on how long you have to hold that property. It's a seasoning clause. And most seasoning clauses are 90 days, which is 3 months, that you must hold that property in title in your name. And that's to avoid, investors getting rich off of short sales and things like that.
Correct. That makes a lot of sense. Okay. All right. Teresa, every time we get into it, it happens. So we are at the end of the show. But callers, if you're listening, please email me, contact Teresa directly. For any questions that you have regarding this segment, regarding the wholesaling aspect, Teresa, that was a wealth of information with the wholesaling aspect, and I think you explained it perfectly. I think that is a really good segue into first-time investors. Just one little question before we close out, just for our listeners. What is the average amount that a wholesaler would make on, or can expect to make on a contract or a deal when being a third party?
It would range by state. Just think about it statewide. I would say it would range between $500 to $30,000. Because remember, In Rochester, New York, or in Detroit, properties where they're, asking prices are $15,000, what have you, you wouldn't expect to make, $3,000 as a wholesaler. So you may be limited to $500 to $1,500.
Right.
But in New York, where the properties, are $300,000 and you can resell them for $400,000, $450,000, you can receive a $20,000 wholesale fee for that. So I think it all depends. And as long as you're getting at a discount and you're selling it at a discount, I don't think your buyer will have a problem.
Okay. That seems like a great way, callers, to get into investing, as you stated, while you are building credit to get into other areas of investing. Wholesale investing seems like the perfect way to kind of get in and get your feet wet. But, again, keeping in mind to find that motivated seller and that cash buyer. So your network sounds like it's very important when it comes to the wholesaling aspect of investing. But Teresa, just to close us out, if you can again provide us with your information so our callers know how to contact you. And again, I know you're offering the Building the Generational Wealth series. So if you can just provide us with your information again so that our callers know how to reach you.
Sure. You can go to my website directly at www.teresa, that's T-E-R-E-S-A, the letter R, Martin.com, or you can call my office at area code 646 646-467-7370. That's TeresaRMartin.com or 646-467-7370. And we do have a wealth building series while you're trying to build your real estate and get your credit and your finances right. We actually have a series to take you step by step on how to do that. So I look forward to hearing from everyone. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you, Teresa. And callers, please take advantage of the information that Teresa provided to lead and guide you to building generational wealth. We thank you so much for tuning in. Hope that you all will join us again for our next show. And have a wonderful weekend, everybody. Thank you again, Teresa.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's our show for today. So until next time, keep it real, listen, learn, and live.